Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 77 of the Alexi Sale podcast. And with me and Talal Karkouti.
Hello.
Hello. And I don't feel like I've got a lot to say, really. Eh?
Should I say Guten Tag, mein Frau?
Yes, I haven't watched it. I know I said we were going to talk about Mephisto. I've only just started watching it. I found it quite, it's stylistically very of its time in a way, isn't it? I mean, that where he's doing the jazz dancing in his underpants.
Yeah.
At the,
and wrestling his naked girlfriend.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of that.
And it's obviously very slow. It's a 1981 film, European art house film. It's slow and I, but the more you get into it and the more you kind of fall in love with the characters,
it
becomes engrossing.
Yeah. Mm. Well, maybe I'll watch it and then we can talk about it next week. You were very taken with it.
I did really like it because it's just very current because of how many of our idols are silent or going along with fascism and genocide. And so it's very interesting. In that aspect. Yeah. And the lead actor is mind-blowing.
Yeah.
He's so good.
Okay.
What's his name?
Kasperi Brandauer, isn't it?
Klaus Maria Brandauer.
Yeah.
Brandauer.
Yeah.
So that's it then, yeah? See you next week, everyone.
Yeah. Bye. I'll tell you what, did I talk about doing Unspeakable?
No.
No.
You did Wang's show.
Yeah, Phil Wang. So I just did an episode of that, recorded it. I don't know when it's going out, but and you're supposed to make up a word, and I made up my word. It was confusional, which is the sense of confidence you get after one kung fu lesson, you know, where you feel like it. but I also, because I know he does that, I can't never remember what it, he does. He's a black belt in some. And his father, I think, and his uncle were martial arts teachers, and so.
Oh, cool!
I challenged him on the radio. You know, he has to, from one martial artist to another. I said he had to fight me, but he didn't. He backed out.
What's the format of the show? I've never heard it.
So the format is it's him and Susie Dent. And they talk a lot about words and etymology and...
Her from Countdown.
From Countdown, yeah.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Talk about funny words. And then there was me and Shaparak Korsandi and another guy's name, I forget. And you make up a word and then you talk about funny shit about that word and... She talks a lot about, you know, derivations of various words, and it's all right. It was fine.
Nice audience.
Yeah, very nice. They laughed their heads off, and it didn't actually feel forced. I mean, it was recorded at a comedy club in Bethnal Green.
Oh, fuck. I drive past that. I can't remember what it's called. It's quite a big venue.
Yeah. Yeah, it's recorded there. They do two shows. I didn't know that. I got there to the sort of... They say, oh, you can't go in. I'm like, I'm one of the contestants. But in fact, they were recording the first show.
You were there early.
I got there early. Is it Backyard Comedy Club? Or
Backyard. Yeah.
Backyard.
Nice one. Well done.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
And did you win, son?
Well, there's no points or anything, really, so you don't.
Did you talk to Susie Dent about...
No, not much.
Rachel Riley?
No. No, we didn't. No, I thought.
All right, we'll look forward to that airing.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I don't know when. I don't know when it's going out.
I'll keep it.
It was fine. I mean, you know.
I'm doing Glastonbury again this year.
Are you?
Yeah, they liked me so much they booked me again, Alexi, and that's thanks to you. I got to play there last year.
Yeah, haven't you already told us that? No,
not on air. I don't.
Right. Okay.
So we did the Young Ones panel last year.
Yeah.
And what was the other thing? An audience with Alexis Sale. Me and Lisa Mayer interviewed you on stage. That was really
nice. That was fun. We're supposed to be doing another. We're going to be supposed to be doing like a Young Ones, like a 15-date Young Ones tour.
Oh.
Everybody, of course, is poor same people. Paul Jackson, Lisa, Nigel. Predictably, Nigel is the only one who can't make his mind up about the dates. I think.
What's he so busy with?
I don't know.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah. So you're doing Glastonbury, yes?
I'm doing a half-hour set on the Friday. And then Saturday night, I'll be comparing for 4 hours.
Wow.
So if you want to come support and show some solidarity.
Yeah, I'm not doing that.
Not you, the listeners.
Oh, right, the listeners, right.
Obviously. Just showing up to support your friend.
I'm not. Oh, God, no. Jesus.
But last year, I remember a couple people just came up to me and said they listened to the podcast. So that was really nice. And including the awesome guy who runs the photo booth in the theater and cabaret area.
Right.
And you go and put, you know, you pose next to a cool sculpture of a moon, and then you have props and costumes. And then he whispered in my ear, "I love the podcast, by the way," as we were walking off.
That's nice.
But I know that last year there was this Zionist contingent that were roaming around the festival complaining at all the Palestine flags, and there was a little stall that were like selling baked goods and raising money for MAP and harassing them and complaining and social media and like just busybodies, you know, just like go enjoy your festival. So I hope, you know, I hope none of them show up to my set because of this podcast and give me guff. I want it to be a guff-free zone.
Indeed. They're so depressing, those people.
Yeah. So, you know Soho Theatre?
Yeah.
You remember all the, you know, the bullshit. They still haven't apologized properly to Paul Curry.
No.
There's still, I think, lawyers are battling it out. They gave him a really weak apology that didn't own up to anything and didn't act, you know, a fake apology kind of thing.
And
it was in private, written you know, on a little post-it note slipped under his door or something. And so that's still going on. And I see people I like and people I know are pro-Palestine and are horrified by the genocide putting on shows there. And, okay, benefit of the doubt, maybe they don't know about the Paul Curry of it all. But is that something I should be, like, messaging people saying you should pull out of your show?
I mean, I wouldn't. Because, you know, there's a girl works there. Well, I used to go there. I used to like to go there and sit under my poster.
Yeah, and have a coffee.
Have a coffee, and I'd get the staff discount for my coffee for it. And I'm not doing that anymore. So, you know, I'm prepared to make sacrifices.
Yeah.
In that way.
Good on you, comrade. Good on you.
Yeah. That's how much I'm prepared to suffer for Palestine.
Do you think it's a worthwhile endeavor to reach out to these people and say, in case you don't know, they're Zionists, you probably shouldn't do your show there, blah, blah, they're going to... Or you could be setting yourself up for trouble by even doing a show there, or... Even some previous guests of this show. For
trouble, really. I mean, people are still... I know some people quietly won't go there anymore. I mean, it's a bit... it's difficult, isn't it, if people... Either they are aware, but they still want to... You know, it's a useful venue. I mean, I don't... actually like it, really. I mean, I wouldn't work there again, because I don't like this sort of sausage factory production line kind of nature of it.
And it seems every American who comes over is just plopped into the Soho Theatre to do their short run.
Yeah. So, but
I don't want to bother these people, you know. I don't want to just be messaging. It's people I know personally, so I can message them, but
you could ask them. I don't want to, you know, they've already booked it,
they've got their dates in.
Yeah, yeah. It's difficult to, you can't really tell people what to do, I think.
Mm-hmm. It's a tricky one, isn't it?
Yeah.
A bit like Mephisto, you know?
Yeah. Playing,
performing for the Nazis.
Yes.
I can't wait to talk about that. I'm worried that by next week, God, I might have forgotten it, but yeah. All right, check this out. Lexi Sale, Salo, as you like to be called.
Yeah.
I set up a new chat room on the Patreon page. It's called Questions for Alexi. And it's a bit of a free-for-all. I've said, this is where you can post questions for Alexi that I might read on the show. Would you like me to fire some at you?
Yeah, go on.
All right, will you ever write a third autobiography? Asks Erica.
Well, what I'm doing at the moment is that the woman who was my editor at Bloomsbury has now moved to Weidenfeld and Nicholson. She's been very keen for a while for me to write my political thoughts, as it were, you know, to because people are desperate to hear some kind of positive message, you know, to hear a kind of left-wing message. So she's been, and I tried to, you know, we talked about, like, because they're very, you know, they do. I mean, Gary Stevenson, obviously, he's been at the top of the charts for months and all that, you know, so there is a gap in the market there. You know, we talked about me writing a book about how to be a socialist or something, and I really found that I just couldn't do it, really. I can't write a book like that, just the kind of didact. So what I'm trying to do is write both that, a book about socialism, my life as in the left, and so it's part memoir, but it's also got kind of bits about left-wing thought and, you know, where the left has failed and where it's been successful, various left-wing ideas.
Like essays? Of, you know, would you call them essays kind of thing? Or
not really essays. What just, I've done is I've taken...
We're just going off on one.
I've taken a demo, because it's called How to Change the World by Walking Down the Middle of the Street Shouting.
Is it really?
Yeah.
It's a fucking great name. Okay,
it is
wicked.
A great title, yeah. And what it is, so I've taken a demonstration, because I've been going on demonstrations, obviously, since I was a baby when my parents would have taken me. So I take a demonstration from each decade of my life and talk about that, the kind of social history of, you know, what was going on then, and also a decade when I didn't go on any demonstrations, the sort of 90s. And then, so I talk about each of those demonstrations, and so it's woven in with my experience of that demonstration, what I was doing, what lessons could be learned from, you know, the movement surrounding those demonstrations and stuff like that. So hopefully I find it quite hard to write, to be honest, but that will be the third volume. It will partly be the third volume of my memoir if it comes out. I'm trying to get a draft together to deliver to my editor in a week or two, really. I've been working on it off and on for about 2 years or something. It's driving me nuts.
Oh, that's what's been driving you nuts?
Okay.
So that's in the works. It's not going to be called Starmer Ate My Placard.
I did think of Blair Boyle My Cat was kind of it, but I couldn't. Partly happiness writes. The second volume goes up to the miners' strike in 1984, and I've just done the second series of The Young Ones. But then after that, it's kind of, I've just found that there was no tension really in my life after that. I'm just talking, you know, I would write about going on tour or getting a cat or moving, you know, it just felt dull to me really. And I couldn't, that's why if it works, this, the demonstrations book will be good, because it's about conflict and it's about failure in a sense. Yeah. Which is more interesting, you know?
Well, it's good. You're not just farting them out, I suppose. You're setting yourself a certain standard.
Yeah,
but you could easily fill a book with all the anecdotes I've heard you tell about, like, you know, spilling gravy on your white linen trousers in front of Spielberg and the tomatoes that the Golden Girls gave you and all that.
I know, I did try that, but it bored me, really. You know.
But how much more can you expand on that? That's really interesting that you're not... You know, someone like fucking, you know, Russell Brand or, you know, or any kind of comic we have on the mainstream TV at the moment, that they would just fill a book with anecdotes like that.
Yeah.
It would be like, chapter five, when me and, you know, when I met King Charles and asked him awkward question about the potato.
Yeah.
Just be, but you want there to be some... conflict and some depth and
I wanted a problem that needs solving. I want it to be a proper, you know, be an interesting and different work of art, really. I can't just write, you know. I've tried. I mean, there is a draft of you know, the sort of, you know, volume three, really, but it just doesn't, I didn't feel like it worked for me, really.
I was speaking to an acquaintance recently and telling him about the protests that we go on and stuff. And so, he goes, yeah, you know, we tried that, didn't we? You know, I was there at the protest for the Iraq War, the Million Man March, and it didn't do anything, did it? So what's the point?
Well, that's true. It didn't, you know. I mean, and obviously, it ends with the Gaza demonstrations, 2023, 2024, 2025, you know.
Yeah.
But you want to
look back and say, I was in that crowd.
Yeah.
I was part of those numbers that refused to accept the status quo.
Yeah. And were roundly ignored by the... Yeah. And also I sort of write a bit about the Arab Spring. I mean, demonstrating, you know, it's... I don't know what it is, really, but... you know, demonstrating in and of itself doesn't get you anywhere, really. I mean, it makes you feel better, and I guess maybe it stops things being even worse, you know, worse than they could be, you know.
You have to provide that voice that tells the government that there are people out there against what they're doing.
Yeah.
That has to exist, whether they listen to it or not.
Yeah. But it needs, I mean, something needs to come out of those. That movement, really, you know, and it is, you know, it isn't wonderful, you know, there's on those demonstrations to see the breadth of, you know, young people, Jewish people, gay people, you know, families, and a political movement needs to come out of that, really. That is the only way that it's going to ultimately.
It does, yeah.
Yeah.
A revolutionary, you know, movement.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some great dogs on those marches.
Yes.
Absolutely good boys and girls.
But it really does need, I mean, it would be, you know, if you know, the world is heading into a kind of, you know, rapidly into a terrible kind of darkness, really, and the only, you know, we've got to at least try and find a way out of that. And this, I feel like the answer lies somewhere in those demonstrations, you know. To an extent.
The closest I found to kind of an answer, it was on the embankment. There was an encampment there, and there were some people camping. So the march went past it, and people were camping on the... I can't remember what the specific event they were camping against. But there were people who were just sleeping in the embankment. They set up a bunch of tents, and then they had one corner where they ran workshops and had talks. And there was a little mobile library in there, and then there was a little makeshift kitchen. And so if anyone who wanted to pop in from the march was offered cups of tea and a little snack. And there was like a blackboard on the wall with a list of, you know, a program, all the different talks they would have and stuff. And you could see how many days they were going to be there. It really moved me. I was welling up just being there thinking how committed and beautiful these people are. And that's where ideas really...
Yeah. Well, it is. I mean, the spirit that you've seen manifested on those demonstrations is heartbreaking, really. But, and it's a contrast with the cynical emptiness of, you know, politicians in general, really. Funny, you know, I mean, this is something. I think Owen Jones got a piece in the Guardian today about, you know, we need a leader, really. Of new left movement. Obviously, Gary Stevenson is one he suggests. I think he's a bit too apolitical. Really. The other one, who would be perfect is I've forgotten his name. Mick Lynch.
Mick Lynch.
The RMT would be.
I would stand behind Mick Lynch.
Yeah, but again, I'm not sure his politics are. I think he said, you know, in the last election, vote Labour, you know, which I certainly couldn't get behind. So I don't know that his politics aren't a bit conventional, really. But and obviously, Jamie Driscoll's doing interesting work in the Northeast. Jeremy's doing, you know, and Andrew Feinstein here in
Feinstein. Camden.
Yeah, they're doing interesting things, really. It just seems very slow, really, to build to build these movements from, you know, the bottom up kind of democracy, people's assemblies and all that. You feel like if you could just magically kind of summon up a party and a charismatic leader, that would be better, really. But I don't know. You know, I mean, the right can do that because they're sort of unified in a way, because they're, you know, like Reform or even the Labour Party. I mean, they're uniform because their only interest is to do bad things, really. And so they just say, well, should we do some bad things? And they go, yeah. And then the press gets some, you know. Whereas, you know, on the left, you think, oh, well, is this, you know, this thing that we're doing, is it inclusive? Is it democratic? You know, it's sort of like... we're so slow, we can't act. I don't know how we can find a way to act quickly, really, because because of our decency that we can't act quickly in the way
what's going to be the triggering event, you know, that is going to make it explode, you know, that make people so angry that they actually go out on the street and
do something,
you know, like you see in the movies, you know, if someone is the government assassinate a left-wing some person or something, you know, or someone gets violent treatment by the police
executive
law is put in, and then everyone just goes, fuck this, and they go out and start burning shit, and we see
some
riots, looting.
Yeah, and then it
small businesses having their windows broken.
Yeah, like Black Lives, it all dissipates, really.
Unless
you can find a way to create a political movement out of that, you know.
I've been seeing these videos of Andrew Feinstein's shit. Which one is it?
I think he's a Steen, actually, though. I think probably
his speech at the Summit of Resistance. On his Instagram, and it's very empowering, and it's all very much like, come on, people, let's fucking disrupt some shit. And I'm seeing more and more of this, that, like, you know, we have to do more. And but, you know, and also, what about those youth at the Quakers that got all arrested because they were gonna What was it? They were going to put, bring London to a standstill. And so, yeah. They still might.
Civil disobedience. Yeah. Well, but it's thought crime, isn't it? Because they hadn't done it. They're only talking about doing it. I mean, Britain is, you know, I'd say Britain leads the world in repressing climate protesters and direct action. I mean, Starmer's got some very authoritarian views. I was reading as well that Germany has planned to start deporting people if they support Palestine. I mean, fucking that country, man, fucking hell. They have not changed. But even like Linda was saying that, you know, I think Berlin is twinned with Tel Aviv, and even and the people from Die Linke were saying, oh, yeah, why didn't we think of this before? I mean, the left-wing, supposed left-wing party, you know, is all for it as well, really. Getting on board with twinning with, you know, where the Holocaust, where the, you know, genocide, our Holocaust is being made. You know.
Well, it does handily work alongside their fear of the right, because the right is rising, the far right is rising in these European countries and here and in America.
Yeah.
And so any kind of policies that the left, and this is me just talking out my ass, but policies that the left can do that might align with what right wing is, so deporting foreigners for speaking out for Palestine. Left,
but it's what Starmer's attempting to do here as well, isn't it? Which never worked. It's not going to work, you know.
People on the right would agree with that, and
yeah. Well, like, that's, you know. But then I'm sure people would say, well, what? If that's all you're offering, we might as well vote for the real Nazis rather than you pretend Nazis. Really. I don't think that tactic is going to work, really. Anywho, that's a long-winded. So there is an autobiography in the works.
Oh yeah,
which was the original question. It will be out next year, all things, if I manage to get it finished.
Okay, well, all right. Next thing, M. Carr, Mr. or Mrs. M. Carr wants a shout out. Because they're travelling all the way from Derry to see our live show on May the 11th.
Oh, right. Have you checked on the tickets? How's that going?
I don't have access to that information, but I can find out.
Yeah.
But buy your tickets. We're playing the Museum of Comedy. Two shows at the end of April.
Yeah.
Two shows at the end of April. One in early May.
Yeah.
We'd love to see you there. If we fill it out, it will encourage us to do more. It will send us out around the country, do a mini tour.
Yeah.
Exciting stuff. Big ups. All right, Alexi, what this is from A1 No Sweat. Okay, fun name. What's Alexi's thoughts on, you might have answered something similar to this, the rock against racism, love music, hate racism, those kind of things. Would you ever like to host or perform at a local one?
Are those things back again? Are they like?
Good question.
I don't know. Are they things that are happening now? I don't know. I mean, in a general sense, I don't think that. I mean, you could MC it. I don't think that comedy and
it doesn't really
music
fit, does
go
it?
Together really. I mean, rock gigs. I mean, I got a lot of offers in the early days to, you know, go out and do support for Madness and stuff like that.
Mm.
And I turn them all down, really, because I think it's a different, it's a different energy, a music gig and stand-up. They're very, very different things in a way. And so, you know, people thought that there'd be a synergy there because of the sort of two-tone. But in fact, I mean, they are...
it's a mood killer when a comedian comes out between bands.
Fuck that.
Just introduce the next band for fuck's
sake. I mean, that's what I used to do it when I was emceeing Glastonbury. I just used to read out announcements and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Make fun of people who've lost their children.
That's fine, yeah. They do love music, hate racism. Looking at their website, they have club nights around the country and live music nights. They still go on.
I think you can do a comedy benefit with the odd musical act, but comedians.
That's a better way around.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Comedians.
You do a comedy night with a music act at the end, like a
big
party kind of after party.
Yeah.
Vibe.
I mean, some people might, because I remember Billy Connolly supported Elton John, I think, at Madison Square Garden, and got away with it. But
Jesus,
there's a famous story about Tommy Cooper, you know, old school.
Mm-hmm.
I think he opened for the Who somewhere and just got bottles thrown at him and stuff. But because he was so drunk, he didn't really notice.
I guess what makes this question interesting for me is that, you know, you've displayed your disdain for things like comic relief and stuff, but is there a distinction between
and
this?
Oh, definitely, No, I think that, yeah, they're good, you know, they're good, sincere things, really. I mean, I mean, those celebrity charity events are, you know, I avoid them, really. I mean, I've never, I think that they're wrong in many different ways, really. As I said on the latest series of Sandwich Bar, really. They're elitist. I think that they're also, you know, there's a question about what, you know, with the money raised, whether that's where that goes. I mean, there certainly was. They've dialed it down, I think, but there was for many years a kind of white savior thing about comic relief, you know.
Yeah, we've covered all this, but that's different to doing a rock against racism.
That's absolutely fine. Yeah, I mean,
But then you have Live Aid.
Yeah, but that was awful.
That's too. Not the same, is it?
No, not at all. No, it's not political, is it? It's just sort of it's just charity, isn't it?
And I think so I'm seeing the distinction now. Yeah. So like a performative fundraising event is one thing, whereas making a political point like fuck racism, fuck fascism, come and enjoy some music.
Yes, that's a different thing to celebrity charity events. You know, there are a lot of questions both about where the money goes, how it's used, and also the you know, what does it do to the art, you know. I mean, there's a sort of, you know, there's I mean, certainly with the later, I mean, you know, there's it's not great material, is it, that they do on Comic Relief? It's not.
Did you watch this year's one? I didn't.
Oh, no, I don't. I don't know. No, I know Lenny loves it, really, and he's always. I don't know whether he knows what I think about it, really.
I think he has an idea. All right, next question. I wasn't. This is from someone called Sir Keir Starmer. Has written on here. again, we've semi-covered this, but it's on his YouTube. I'm going to paraphrase it. When you did that Owen Jones interview a few years ago, do you remember that when you were on his podcast? It says, Alexei clearly looked unhappy having to speak to him. And from the things he was saying, have you changed your opinion about Owen since? And then he goes on to say some nasty things about Owen, but then another patron of ours swoops in the responses and defends Owen.
I was uncomfortable doing that, really, because he Linda had wound me up, really, about I don't know if I'm misrepresenting him, but he had at the last minute sort of wobbled a bit on the fake anti-Semitism.
Agreed, that's why we were angry with him at the time. He was saying some dumb shit about
and Corbyn. I think later, and he has since, I think, apologized for that.
I believe he has,
He said, you know, he's admitted he was wrong. And it's an amazing thing for people, for somebody to admit that they're wrong, I think is an extremely brave thing to do, really, because human beings are sort of hardwired to not admit that they're wrong and think of all kinds of reasons why they're in fact right. So it's, you know, I think it was brave of him. And he, you know, he's been fantastic about Gaza.
Absolutely.
And when I saw him backstage at the one.
It was the one in January, where they the January march, protest. The was one, it November the, or January?
The one where they wouldn't let us march.
Yeah, it was January 17th, yeah.
Right. And, you know, we embraced I was very pleased, pleased to see him. And
we'd love to have him on here.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, absolutely.
I agree. Like, his videos on Gaza are just, it's just really nice to see. He's so emotional, passionate, but articulate. And you can tell he means it. He's really welling up thinking about these horrid
and
murders.
I think, we can't, on the left, I don't think we can afford to be choosy. We can't be.
No.
I can't think of the word really, but we can't be kind of puritanical about it. You know, we have to,
we have to start, if we want to build communities, we have to start accepting each other.
Yeah.
Even if we don't like everything about each other.
Yeah.
Because dialogue doesn't exist unless we, embrace each other and talk to each other. We can't learn from each other.
Exactly.
How many more times can I say each other? But I watched a very interesting video on this recently, and people talk about community, but they won't fucking talk to their neighbor because they piss them off a bit. But like, just because of the way they talk or a habit they have. But like, that shouldn't stop you from building a community. We have to find solidarity and where we can,
indeed.
Otherwise, what the fuck are we doing? Thank you for these questions. Thank you for that question, Sir Keir Starmer. Let me find another one. Okay, this is fun. This is from Emma. Which writers of fiction does Alexei admire besides Evelyn Waugh? And who does he regard as his literary influence has?
I mean, I don't read a lot of fiction these days, really. I'm actually just reading an Alison Lurie book. I was always a big fan of Anne Tyler. The most famous book is probably The Accidental Tourist. It's still going, still writing about Baltimore. Some amazing, her best Ladder of Years, I think, is amazing. It's a real kind of humane, really interesting writer of fiction. I read a lot of Graham Greene. I was just reading a book, a guy called, I think, Kevin Barry, called Night Boat to Tangiers. I just finished that, which is amazing. Really,
I've heard of that book.
Yeah. Really interesting, sort of innovative way to write fiction. I said Graham Greene, didn't I? I used to read, when I was a lot younger, tons of science fiction, really, all the classics, Asimov. And but I don't know, mostly I read books about the Labour Party now.
Now you do, yeah.
For some reason, I don't know why, I just got this one. I could just reach out on my desk and got this one about, it's in Mirror, isn't it? But it's about Starmer.
Get in.
Rise to Power, yeah.
That's the name of the book, Get In.
Yeah.
A question for you about Evelyn, because have you seen the film Saltburn?
Yes.
So I haven't read Brideshead Revisited yet, but the other day I picked it up and read the blurb, and it's the plot of Saltburn.
Yeah, a bit, yeah. Yeah.
Is it not?
People did make that point.
They really did they?
I mean, it is and it isn't, really.
So Brideshead Revisited doesn't go down the same path as Saltburn does.
I love Brideshead Revisited. I mean, so I think it's a masterpiece, really, even though it's about a lot of stuff that I hate.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same in that Charles Ryder is invited to come and spend the summer at this stately home.
Yeah.
By somebody he's met at Oxford, whose name I've briefly forgotten.
And he's a bit more introverted and comes from a more modest background, and he gets invited to the stately home.
And he's being sort of picked up by, I forgot his fucking name. rock it up for me. So I seen Mum Lizzie.
Who the
the main character of? I mean, not the main character,
but Brideshead.
Yeah, the one who invites him to the.
Okay. What, Charles Ryder?
No, Charles Ryder is the central character.
The Flight family, Sebastian Flight.
Yeah, so Sebastian. Then he also, it's where we get that when he meets Sebastian.
It would be hard for me to make you look clever if you don't actually say
No, well, you can keep it in then. It did come back to me.
I was getting ready to edit that and make you seem really smart. Okay, I'll keep that whole bit.
There's also that wonderful, when he meets Sebastian's sister, Diana, because obviously there is a homoerotic element to their friendship, but also when he sees Diana and he's got a bat squeak of desire.
Like in Saltburn as well.
As he mentions, he say about yeah.
No, he doesn't say that. Yeah. But there's the thing with the sister, yeah.
Yeah, it's. But I mean, Brideshead is less. You know, doesn't. It's not less grand guillot, and I mean, it doesn't end in murder and.
Right.
So on and so forth. The way Saltburn does. Spoiler alert. But yes, they've obviously. I presume they've stolen that storyline. I mean, that's fine.
That is fine. All right. Well, thanks for that question, Emma. Do you want some more, Lex?
Yeah. Yeah.
Come on, got
I feel guilty that I can't think of more fiction authors, really. Tolstoy. Tolstoy.
Have you heard of a book called The Golem and the Ginny?
No. I mean, it sounds vaguely familiar, but no.
I think it did quite well, but it was by Helene Wicker. I think Wecker. Thanks, B. And it's kind of a magical realism novel, and it's about this old rabbi. This set like in Victorian times, New York City, but like this old rabbi created a golem.
Yeah,
that comes to life. And makes its way. He's in Eastern Europe somewhere, but this golem finds itself in New York, and a genie, which is an ancient Islamic mythical creature, finds itself freed from its lamp prison in New York City around the same time, and they meet each other, and it's this kind of semi-romance, kind of beautiful clashing of worlds.
Okay,
and it's just it's gorgeously written as well, and
right. I'm not going to read that.
It's really beautiful. Have you ever read and do you ever read any fantasy or magical kind of?
Oh
books?
Dear God, no.
You're all You've always been quite grounded in your entertainment and intake. Okay. What? You'd love it. You'd love it, says my partner. Well, it is beautiful, and it's like Jewish and Arabic, because that was a time when New York was a real melting pot, and you had these Jewish quarters and these Arab quarters, Little Syria, and they're really portrayed so beautifully, these different cultures. And they're also portrayed coming together really nicely as well. And the conflicts are all there as well. It's really cool, man. And it's before Israel ever existed. And she calls it Palestine in the book, which is, you know, shout out. All right. What's a piece, this is from AP or app. What's a piece of striking or moving fan mail you've received? Or message or something from a fan? Has anything ever really moved you?
Oh, God. I don't know. Man's taking me out in a Morgan car tomorrow. He's not a fan particularly, but what have you got on your nose? Oh, it's really.
Say that again. A man's taking you out.
I think he writes for a magazine about, you know, Morgan cars, and we're going for a drive tomorrow. Oh.
What's a Morgan car?
The Morgans. They're made in Malvern. They're a British manufactured sports car. They have a wooden chassis.
Oh, wow.
And they also make a three-wheeler. Yeah, they still make them. They don't make many.
Wow, they're beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, be careful. Do you have to wear a helmet in that
thing? No, fuck off. It's a car.
Where's he taking you?
I think we're only going to Islington, actually. But we were going to go further, I think. I'm going to drive it a bit.
Wow. Beep, beep. Get out of the way. Alexis Zale's coming. Okay, so...
Maybe I'll try and think of more. I mean, you know.
All right.
Friend.
Okay, one more. Dr. Philip asks about... Because he brought up the secret policeman's other ball last week, and he wonders if you've ever crossed paths with Ken Campbell and what you make of his work.
Not really. I mean, it's... he was very on... The night that Rick and Aid first appeared at the Comedy Store, which is also Black Saturday, with you know when I I must have told the story about when I point the gun at the audience.
Yeah.
So which was also the night that Rick and Aid first came to the Comedy Store, and Ken Campbell for some reason was there with them. I mean, he's actually very funny. He's in one episode of Fawlty Towers, isn't he? Which is very good. I never, at the time, the sort of thing that he did was stuff that I didn't like, really. That kind of unstructured, mad. He did a famous thing which lasted like 24 hours, the Illuminatus or something, I think. It was anathema to me then because I was interested in much kind of, you know, more aggressive kind of cabaret style stand-up, really, you know, and stuff that was very tight and was both, you know, while obviously the references were erudite, but also that it was popular and populist, really, and that Ken Campbell's work rather didn't appeal to me really, but I think there's a lot of people that kind of I don't know whether now I might feel a bit more mellow about it really. And a lot of people I think came through Ken Campbell. Somebody was talking to me about him the other day. Yeah,
I'm looking at him now. I only recognise him from Fawlty Towers, really.
Yeah, no, he did some really interesting stuff.
But yeah, he was a director and writer mainly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting stuff like what?
Well, like this thing, this Illuminatus that went on for 24 hours.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know what else, really. I mean, because I was part of my shtick then was taking the piss out of, like, lefty liberal things like fringe theatre. So, I mean, I never did anything about that, but it was a kind of, I had a disdain for that kind of stuff then, really. Now, looking back, I don't, you know.
I just read some gossip about Ken Campbell.
On the internet?
Yeah.
What is it?
He was in a relationship with Nina Conti.
It must be quite an age difference.
Yeah, big age gap there.
Yeah.
And when he died in 2008, he was only 66.
Oh, right.
She inherited his collection of ventriloquist dummies.
Oh, right. But she was already a vent herself by then.
Yeah, but she has expanded her repertoire of puppets and things. And she's very good. Her show, her current show.
Tom Conti's daughter.
Come again?
She's the daughter. Her father was Tom Conti. He was a famous actor.
Oh, which might be how she met Ken Campbell. Tom Conti. Oh, there he is. Oh, God, Rolls Royce.
Had a thing about, I think, got a lot of parking tickets.
I didn't know that. Right. Okay. Fascinating stuff. Thank you for all those questions. Patreon.com/AlexisSaleSpodcast.
Yeah.
Is where you can go to support the show.
Yeah.
Chuck us a few quid. It would mean the whole world to us. We've had lots of new members joining. this week. Claire joined us this week. David joined us this week. And Sarah, thank you, new members and old members. And Lemmy Henry. So people can just write any name they want and when they sign up.
It's a love chat of Lemmy and Lenny.
Yeah, I suppose. If you have any questions for Alexi and you're not on the Patreon, you can email us at alexislpodcast@gmail.com. Isn't that right, Alexi?
That is right. Yeah, that's what you should do.
Indeed.
That's definitely what you should do.
Okay, we will talk about Mephisto next week.
Yes, we will. I swear. I promise.
Do you promise?
Yeah.
Lots of nice feedback about our Beyond the Fringe chat last week. I really enjoyed that lecture you gave on them. They were
You're welcome.
And they're very funny, really great act. That 2-hour show of theirs that's on YouTube is brilliant.
The Beyond the Fringe, the original stage show. Yeah, it is. They were real innovators, you know.
Okay, I think.
Yeah, we're done.
It's not our longest episode, but why not?
Yeah. All right. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Alexis L Podcast. This show is produced and edited by Talal Karkuti. Music by Tarbush Records. Thanks to Audio Boom for hosting us. Please keep your emails coming in at alexislpodcast@gmail.com. Goodbye.